All right, we are Galexis and welcome. Welcome to Magical Money Manifestation. Part one, healing your relationship with money. Now, we know that you are interested in spirituality and metaphysics. You are treading your spiritual path. And probably you have noticed that very often when you take a path towards spirituality, when you begin to go beyond the consensus reality, looking beyond into the mystic realms of consciousness, that sometimes it disconnects you a bit from your mundane, regular work life. Now, not all of you can make your living doing something metaphysical, but it seems that very often, and this has been the case for hundreds of years, that those people who go in a spiritual direction generally are like leaving society and also foregoing the whole money trip. And so therefore, a lot of spiritual people seem to be poor or struggling with money or somehow or another just can't get into the higher levels of abundance. Now, we're not saying everybody who is spiritual is like this, and evidently not, but it has a tendency to fall that way. So we are addressing this specifically to those of you who, on the spiritual path, want to also be able to live a richly rewarding financial life. And so there are some secrets of money that we would like to tell this day. You see, money itself is an energy. It's a vibration. It just is. It's a vibration like a tree has a certain vibratory frequency, a certain vibratory pattern. A person has one. A rock has one. The sky has one. So does money. Money has its own vibratory resonance. Money is a concept. A concept about exchange. About creating a medium of exchange, a give and take, an energy flow that is involved in giving and receiving, exchanging, bartering, and arranging a sense of value. If look at how inconvenient it would be if you were to have to barter for every single thing that you bought. That you'd have to haggle and figure out, you know, what you're going to exchange for it. Money makes it much, much easier. It makes it very easy to figure out how to buy things. What would you do if you didn't have a credit card? What would you do if you didn't have a way of buying things? Well, money provides that. Money's convenient. Money is a very great way of assigning a certain set value that can be worked around, that can be expanded, contracted, that can be played with, that people can negotiate with, that people can set as a frame of reference. Yes, money is convenient. Is convenient for the whole culture. Everybody agrees that there is money. Everybody agrees with the idea of money. It's convenient for you to use, for other people to use, so that you can engage with your culture, with society, with the world now. Now, when you think of money, there's a lot of associations with it. Maybe some positive, maybe some negative. But there's a lot of history that you have personally with money, the experiences you've had with money, your past with money. Now, you've had bad experiences, perhaps. You've had good experiences. There's been lots of things that have happened with you and money over the years. So you have these associations with money. Now, understand everybody else has their associations with money. Everyone else has their history with money. And so on a social grand collective level, money is just filled with all sorts of assumptions and ideas, feelings and experiences, all loaded upon this one word. It creates what is called, or what we are going to call, a thought form. Now, thought forms are energetic structures that are imbued with so much reality, so much life, that they come across real, quote unquote. Now, money is an illusion. It's an idea. It's a vibration. Yes, you may have coins and bills and things like that to represent money. And it has a feeling, yes, this is money. But, you know, you don't really rely on that so much anymore. You've got credit cards on, and you have online banking. And so it's numbers in the air, you know. Numbers floating around in the cloud, right? So you have a whole etheric connection to money. You have a physical connection to money, and everybody else does too. And this creates a sense of reality for money. It becomes solid. It becomes, as a solid feature, an assumption that everybody holds about it, that you too feel swept up in without your conscious awareness of it. It's like, think about all the energies that go on when there's a big lottery drawing, right? And heading into that lottery drawing is millions of people putting their dreams, their fantasies, their ideas on money. My gosh, it's loaded up. When you load up any kind of concept, it begins to become real. It forms a energetic structure. It takes form. And it becomes a thought form. Now, thought forms can appear like real things. So thought forms are like ghosts. You know, some people can see ghosts in a haunted house. And these ghosts are playing out maybe some murder that happened 50 years ago or something continuously. There's these patterns, the poltergeists and so on. Yes, it comes into the physical, but these are thought forms. They're representative of a soul, but there are patterns that are just repetitive and repetitive. People who can see spirits, sometimes the spirits don't look like spirits, don't look like human beings, but they take on forms of human beings. And so they are thought forms. Now, soul can activate them. But when you have an abstract concept like money, it becomes a thought form. It doesn't have soul substance, but it comes across real, and you can interact with it directly, which is what you're going to do later today. So when you work with money, you're working with an energy of giving and receiving. You're working with an energy of value that is assigned to it. It's no intrinsic value, it's just a vibration, but there's a value assigned to it, depending on where you live and what the prices of things are around you. And it's a good thing. It's an easy thing. It's a convenience. Now, money has its dark side. The dark side of money is that money has been used from just about the beginning of the creation of the idea of money and finding gold and precious things of value, of scarce value, that give a certain enhanced value and price. To be able to hold on to that money, to be able to manipulate with it, to be able to control with it. Not just to survive, not just to get what you need as far as resources, but to extend a sense of control or domination beyond. Now, some of this is useful. You want to be able to build money, save money, have money for retirement. You don't want to run out of money before you die. You want to have money for your family, for your children, for your projects, for your fun. You want to have money, and you need to build a certain amount of money for that. But you see, you have grown up in a culture. And this culture has the idea of money. You grew up with the idea of money that your culture holds. And in your culture, there are people who have more money than others. People who control more money than others. People who have access to resources and others who do not. The dark side of money is that the collective, the consensus reality, the mainstream, this huge thought form complex that is all the people in a culture, in a society, all right? All of this forms a kind of a idea of a culture, of a tribe. And money is used as a way to keep you in the tribe. Now, they want you, the tribal leaders in the past, required that everyone be very homogenous. Everyone do what they can do to really align with it, to hide with it, to not give away the location or any kind of assets or resources or opportunities for enemies to attack. It's a circle the wagons mentality. So you had to have a hegemony. You had to have a belief system that was consistent through everybody so that you could have this whole coherence, cohesiveness in your culture. It was necessary for the survival of your tribe, beset as it might be by enemies. So this cohesion of culture, extremely, extremely important. But you see, even after there were no enemies that could take you at night or could destroy your tribe, even when you became part of a nation, part of a whole world community, and there wasn't danger knocking immediately at your door, the culture has set it up so there is hegemony. Hegemony means that the leaders of your culture have decided what is the appropriate philosophy for the culture, what is the belief systems for the culture, and of course, the leaders of the culture, who are the ones who have accumulated perhaps more resources, definitely want the philosophy of the culture to support their expanded wealth. So what you have here is, in this culture, you have people at the top, like you have corporate CEOs, you have religious authorities at the very top, you have politicians at the top, you have a lot of people who have money, power, influence at the top. And so they give you a spiel, they give you a story, they give you a narrative that what's good for them is good for you, even if you only make, you know, $20,000 a year or something. They have it set up so that they can remain at the top. And, okay, if you want to get to the top, fine, but you'll have to work your way up there. You'll have to be smart. You'll have to be really smarter than other people. You have to be competitive. You'll have to drive yourself to come up, because we're not going to really relinquish our level easily. And this hegemony, you know, is the narrative of a nation, for example. The American hegemony can be like the Channel's mother used to say back in the 50s, what's good for GM, the car company, is good for the U.S. What's good for GM is good for the U.S. So what's good for the top industries, the big corporations? That's good for everybody. And based on this, a whole political system has arisen. And everyone has been entrained that what's good for the patriarchy, what's good for the leaders, what's good for the country is what is good for the top dogs. And everyone identifies, okay, well, you know, it's if it's good for them and it's good for me, then I should be a top dog. I need to be up there. And so people who do not make it up to the top of the social ladder financially very often feel like something missing in them. There's a shame. There's a sense of failure. There's a sense of inadequacy. Why can't I get up there? You know, I believe in the narrative as well as anyone else. Well, the energy of this whole collective cultural thought, it's like a matrix. You know, you can refer to the movie The Matrix. Yes, it is. It's a matrix of vibrations and energies that hold a structure of a culture in place, and everyone in the culture must know their place. And so in this culture, you are expected to be a good earner and contribute to the economy. After all, the economy is the most important thing, right? Now, there is a, on a metaphysical level, there is a coherence of this culture that in Russian metaphysics they call the egregor. And we're going to use that term. It's very convenient because you don't have a term that really truly matches that. Now, you have the mainstream, the idea of the mainstream, all the ideas that are going on in the flow of ideas and the flow of time and the culture and so on. And the mainstream are is that body of ideas, beliefs, and so forth that are the most consistent amongst the whole culture. The mainstream is the most dominant philosophical experience in the whole culture. All right, so that's the mainstream. The consensus is the kind of the agreed upon boundaries and rules of the culture. And the consensus and the mainstream are pretty closely intertwined. Now you can look at it like Jung looked at it and called it collective. The collective, the term the collective was used a lot, you know, by communism and early socialist movements to talk about, you know, how, you know, the people together form this tribe, form this culture. It does take into consideration everybody in the culture, not just focusing on the predominance of the few at the top. However, the collective isn't quite as strong on a physical level as keeping everybody in line, but it is strongest in the unconscious mind. That's why Jung referred to it as a collective unconscious. Now, we're not using the term unconscious the way some, you know, ego spiritual people would use it and saying, oh, you know, this person doesn't believe the way I am. They're so unconscious. No, we're not using it that way. Well, the way we're using it is that you've been so many generations growing up in a culture that is basically a patriarchal, hierarchical culture. This is worldwide, pretty much, with a very few rare exceptions, where there's a bunch of male authorities and power people and dominators at the top. And even though if there's a rule of law, then you may find it in the private sector, in corporations and big money people and banks and so on, you know, holding tremendous amounts of power. So what you're seeing here is that in a culture that you want to use a term that refers to the disadvantage, you might even say, to the individual in a culture that is a collective consensus mainstream. Because anyone who is not right there in the middle of the mainstream, that doesn't adore pop culture in every which way, who has the regular spiritual leanings to go with the mainstream religion, hook, line, and sinker, is probably a hetero person. Nobody who goes out and who's gay or lesbian or non-gender specific. There's this kind of core idea of this individual that must kowtow to the culture because this represents the culture. And in the current cultures worldwide, for the most part, it's a male in a business suit. Well, the egregor is the part of the psychic part of this culture that organizes the energy flows of the culture. In other words, a culture is like an institution. An institution generally is mostly concerned about expanding its power and maintaining it and continuing it through generations. It's like building up an empire and continuing it and expanding the empire. And that idea is what the egregor does. It fulfills that idea. In other words, it takes energy from you, the individual, puts it into the culture, and it gives that energy to the favored ones. It gives that energy to the leaders. That gives that the energy to the influencers. It gives the energy to those people that fulfill the closest to the idealized cultural icons, the ones who would be the perfect, most favored people. Now, there's a lot of diversity in that at this point, so there's a lot of cultural change going on. But there still is a tremendous grip by the egregor on money. And so what happens is that you are a consumer. It requires consumer and putting money into the economy. And the ones at the top getting money. Now, if you earn it, if you work hard enough and you earn your money, then you earn a pittance. Then you earn whatever, you know, you can allow yourself to receive, or you can earn whatever you deserve according to the rules and the standards, quote unquote, of the collective, of the egregor. So if you are a bit off, if you are a bit rebellious, the egregor is going to make sure that you don't get money. You are not funded. The channel had a friend who was an astrologer, like she was at the time, and the astrologer got featured in a local newsletter, a newspaper, and immediately got death threats from religious fundamentalists. And the biggest threat, though, that she was given was that we're going to make sure you never earn another dollar in this town. So the idea is that the way we're going to extinguish anyone who is not going according to our dominant theory, which is right, this is the only way, then we're going to deny them money. And this works in so many different ways. Fortunately, her friend was planning to move out of the city anyway. So she's like, okay, well, whatever. You know, it just kind of gave her an additional urge to move. But it points out how the culture works. Those at the top don't want you to leave the culture. Now, those of you who perhaps do not conform to the standard body, the standard race, the standard religion, the standard way of being, are often seen as rebels Sometimes you even or pride yourself on being rebellious against the collective. But when you're a rebel, you are giving your power still to the collective. And this is the problem. This is the problem with money, is that you've given so much power to money. And when you are a rebel, the consensus, the egregor, makes sure that you don't get much resources. They don't want you to have resources. They want resources still in alignment with the primary narrative. All right, so what we're saying here is that in order for you to heal your relationship with money, you're going to have to heal it with the whole collective, with the egregor. And that's what we're going to be doing today. You're going to heal it with, first you've got to heal it with the whole collective. You've got to become a favored one. And there is a way of doing that. There is a way of you becoming a favored one. It doesn't necessarily mean you're going to suddenly roll in the dough, but it does mean that the egregor is going to respect you and not withdraw resource from you. And we'll get to that in just a little bit later. But you see, the favored ones hold a resonance of self-knowing. And when you make peace with all of this, your self-knowing is going to guide you to your success. Now, when you were growing up, you learned about money from your parents, from teachers, from other kids, from, when you started work, you learned it there, you learned it over the media, mainly over the media. And you also learned that if you didn't have money, woe unto you, that you were going to be lower in social status, you were not going to get what you wanted, you were going to be limited, your life choices were going to be restricted, nobody was going to love you, nobody's going to want you, blah, 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 da, 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 and on and on. Lots of emotional garbage was attached to not having money. So everyone grew up in a family, whether it was cohesive and prosperous or even broken and struggling, but everyone learned about money and learned about the importance of money, because society wants money to be so important that you will give up your freedom for it. You'll give up your self for it. You'll compromise yourself to survive by taking a job you don't even want. Not everybody can do absolutely what they absolutely are thrilled about doing from the get-go. Most people have to go through years of adjustments, compromises perhaps, working really, really hard until you burn out, or you have experiences. So we're going to start here exploring, your own personal history with money and with the collective. Because the collective wants you to believe that if you are truly true to yourself, you are alone and you are not going to have money. So what we want to check is, all right, when you were a child, what did you know about money? Did your parents talk about it? Did they argue about it? Was it a mystery, a secret nobody ever talked about? Whatever you were perceiving about money, you knew it was kind of important, because there would be times when you'd get a special toy or goodie or something, and you knew that this was something that was bought for you. Money made you feel special. Ooh, yeah, this goodie. I have this goodie now. I have this wonderful toy. I have this wonderful thing. And if your parents had struggles with money, then maybe you would not really be able to experience that many goodies. But you would also think, oh my gosh, how important money is. And you would crave and yearn for that. We have talked with more than one friend in our private sessions who were in a family, and in that family, they were kind of the poor branch of the family. And so they looked over at their cousins, and their cousins were rich, and they were poor. It was like, well, this sucks. This is not fair. And there was always that comparison. It was always kind of painful, because when there were big family gatherings, they couldn't splurge on anything. They couldn't, you know, pay for everybody or anything. They were like the poor members of the family. And they grew up and life was hard for them. So it is sometimes you get kind of a comparison in your childhood of other families and your family. The Channels family was a kind of medium middle class family, and her best friend was of a poor family. And so any time that she and her girlfriend wanted to go to the movies, her mother would pay for it, would take them there and pay for her friend as well. That was just the way it was. But you see, you want to have your own source of money. You want to be free. You want to be yourself. In childhood, you were dependent. You couldn't earn all that money yourself unless you were a famous child star or something. So you saw yourself dependent on money. Your parents dependent on money. Your lifestyle dependent on money. And you couldn't do anything about it. You were powerless. You were depending on your parents figuring it out for you. Not every parent can do that. When you're an adolescent, then you had your whole relationship with your peers, and there were comparisons there. Who wore the better clothes? And later on, who drove the better, you know, car? Who had more things? Who had more freedom to do interesting things? And then, of course, you had the idea of rebelling. You wanted to be yourself. You wanted to be an individual, but at the same time, you wanted to belong in the group. And here is generally where the culture gets you, because it's in adolescence where the pressure is highest for you to conform to the image that society has for you. Your gender training is strongest in adolescence. The media, very powerful in adolescence, because they know that you're easily influenced in adolescence. You still didn't have purchasing power unless you had indulgent parents. But there was a lot of comparisons. You began seeing your position in the social fabric, where you belonged in the social fabric, whether you were in the core of it, whether you were vying to be in the in-group, to be popular, or whether you were in the out-group, whether you were on the fringe, whether you were on the sidelines, whether you were left out or not. These energies continue with relationship to money. Are you being left out? Here there's so much abundance. They talk about the economy being prosperous. Are you being left out of this prosperity? Where are you in your culture? Are you like the adolescent, or not quite fitting in, vying to be popular but not quite getting it? Where were you in adolescence? And where are you now with money? Now, after you graduated from high school, hopefully you did, maybe you went to college, maybe you didn't, maybe you went to another type of training, military, who knows what you did, but after high school, as your physical body matured, you entered a phase which was kind of like an extended period of adolescence, but you were also moving into adulthood. And it's a particular time, but kind of between the ages of 18 and 21, where you really think you know everything. You think you've got it figured out. You finally got it. You finally got your adolescent self together. And so you're assuming that adulthood, you're buying into fantasies and ideas about life. You're assuming how society works. You're not quite sure because you haven't really fully engaged with it. But when you start getting a job, when you start working in your 20s, this is a time for you to find your career track, what you want to do with your life. And a lot of people find, well, darn, just as it's time for me to launch and find what I want, I don't have the money to do it. I've got to work, or I've got to be dependent on somebody who works, or we're building a family and I've got to focus there. So a lot of times, the self-discovery that is intended for the young adult's exploration gets suppressed, delayed, and sometimes compromised for good. What happened to you in your 20s? Did you lose your track? Were you unable to explore and have fun and find what your path was? Did you get snagged with responsibilities early? Did you find that the doors of prosperity were shut to you? Did you succeed tremendously and go gangbusters in a certain direction only to at some point find a dead end and go, well, what am I doing? I've got to keep doing this even if I don't want to because this is where the money is. What happened? What happened to you and with you and money in your 20s? Well, where are you now? Where are you now with money? Where are you now with the whole egregore, with the whole collective? Where are you now? Do you fit into the mainstream? Probably not. If you're on a spiritual path, there's a greater inclination towards the mystical than the religious. And that is actually, the unique path that everyone trods is a mystical path. The way home to the divine, to God, God is all that is, the return to that, the lifting, the journey of transcendence is all mystical. It's not religious. If you notice, religion has a whole codification, rules and regulations and hierarchy. It has judgments of good and bad, right and wrong. Do you make these judgments yourself on other people? On how other people use money? Because very often, young adults, well, especially if they see themselves as spiritual, they'll think, well, you know, here's this rich, rich billionaire having 5 cars in their garage. If I had that money, I would spend it so much more wisely. I deserve that money because I would do good things with it. Would you? Or is that a fantasy? Where are you now about money? Do you have a certain cynicism about it? Are you at peace with it, more or less? Do you still worry about it or feel insecure about it? Do you have a lot of hope for more prosperity and abundance in your future? Do you have fantasies about it? Let's just do a little check here. Go into your past, whether it's a recent past or distant past, and go to a past in which you ran out of money, or you were really scarce of money, really in privation about money, limited, you didn't know where your rent was going to come from or something. Have you ever been there? In your mind, in your imagination, in your memory, go back there. Step into that self that you were back there as best you can. Because, of course, very often, if you have pain in your past, you erase it in your memory. But try your best to go back and feel what it felt like to be virtually out of money, wondering where the next dollar, the next meal, the whatever is coming from. What did you think about money then? What did you think about yourself? Did you judge yourself? Did you feel like a flop? Did you encourage yourself? Did it mobilize you? Did it depress you? Did you want to run away and hide? Did you look for whoever it was that you could borrow some money from, or who could take care of you, or you could crash with, or you... What did you do when you were in a situation like that? Did you feel that you were for sure that you were going to be okay? Did you feel that you were going to survive? Did you feel you were going to die? You know, when you're an adolescent, everything is so intense. If you remember adolescence, it's like if you have a social embarrassment, I could just die of embarrassment, of shame, of humiliation. But when you get out into the world and all of a sudden there's nothing there, no resource for you, do you really expect to die? Do you die? Do you feel tremendous shame? What happens when things like that go wrong? When you lose your money, when it's gone, or it's not coming in anymore? What kind of thoughts go in your head if you worry, when you worry? When you get desperate, what can I do? What can I do? What can I do? You know, when that happens, you know what money is then. Money is the key, pivotal, most important thing. You know, the channel years and years ago, she said, oh, if I only had $50,000, I would be so fine. Everything would be fine. I could take care of everything. I'd be able to get all this done, and I'd be able to move forward and build this career and do that and that and that. If I just had $50,000, I could just, oh gosh, I could just relax. It'd just be so easy. Years later, she had $50,000. What do you think she did? Oh, if I just had $100,000, I could just, so, it would just be so easy. I would never have to worry about money. Everything would be just great. Eventually, she caught on what she was doing. Because what society trains you to do about money and seeing that money is so important, is to make money when it's important. When something is valuable, it is also seen as scarce, because when things are scarce that are desirable, they're seen as valuable. So you got hooked into seeing money as more valuable than it really is. It's an energy, it's a vibratory frequency. But you think of money in terms of survival, ability to thrive, security. Money is security. Well, we know rich people, people who have so much money that if they spent it freely, they wouldn't be able to spend it the rest of their life. They wouldn't be able to. They have that so much. And would you know? They're scared of their money running out. They need more because they're searching for security. Do you search for security with money? If you do, you're in a codependent relationship with it. This is not a good relationship. Do you crave it? Do you long for it? Do you fantasize about winning the lottery? If only I had so much money, I would feel secure. Everything would be okay. Now, if you ever have had a fantasy of winning the lottery, and you make up some kind of great astounding figure that you win in this lottery, you have this wonderful time that you start figuring out what you're going to do with the money. Where are you going to put the money? It never turns out to be fully crystal clear, because what you're really looking for is that feeling of freedom. Freedom from having to worry about money. Freedom to be yourself. Freedom to do whatever it is you want to do with whomever you want to do it, whenever you want to do it. And you see, money is giving you that. Well, let us share with you what so many extremely rich people do. They're workaholics. They're devoted to building their money more and more and more and more and more and more. Yeah, they can have great vacations, but they have their vacations with the same intensity with which they're continuously overworking to make more and more money. It becomes an obsession. And you know you don't want to do that. And you can't see, you know, you don't want to be one of those people. Maybe you want their money, but by golly, you don't want to do all that dancing for the money. You don't want to do all that work. You don't even think you have it in you to work that long, that hard, and make all those deals and run around doing this and doing that. That's only for a few people's temperament. And even so, very often when if there is a person who becomes really wealthy, who actually gets that, okay, I have enough that I can really put my focus on something I really want to do. You'll notice that people like that will get into another direction, another career, or they'll add something, or they'll learn something, or they'll develop another skill or talent or something. Or they will start a foundation or that's dear to their heart. That's a kind of rich person you like to be. One that seems secure. One that's willing to be themselves. Now, the reason we're talking so much about the collective, about the egregor who is continuously sucking energy from you to build up the collective bigger and bigger and bigger, and when you're not focused on making money and being part of the collective, they don't make as much energy from you, and so they don't like you. Right. So, but if you're going to make money, if you're going to earn money, if you're going to engender and build a fortune or amass wealth and have access to money as a resource for you to cover your bills, to live comfortably, okay, the collective is what gives it to you. You don't get your money from the sky. You get it from other people. You get it from the collective. You get it from the consensus, from the mainstream. You get it from there. If you have something of value to offer, then you'll become an influencer and people will come to you and give you some money. But unless you reach the masses, you don't make the humongous fortunes. You know, the channel knew a fellow who had built up a very big money-oriented business. He had a business that tracked investments and the markets and things like that. And he made a good, really good living at it. And he said, here's the piece of advice I want to give you. If you the masses, you work for the classes. So if you're working for the classes, for people who are rich, if you work for the rich people, then you eat with the poor people. But if you work for the poor people, or you work for the mainstream, then you make money and you eat with the classes. You become wealthy. How do you do that if you're a spiritual person? How do you do that if your interests are very eclectic and different from the mainstream? Well, we're going to get to that later. But the first thing for you to look at here is how you have bought into and you have been trained into believing in this whole hegemony. That's the narrative of the upper class. You have been given this, and it's been training you to be a part of the consensus. It's not been training you to be wealthy. It's been training you to give energy to the culture, and you'll get energy back depending on how much you give to the mainstream, how much you give, how much you earn, how much you deserve. Well, one of the things we suggest is that in order to deal with this, you've got to come to peace with the collective, as we said, and you've got to remove this excessive importance off of money. You've got to step outside the corporate hegemony, the religious hegemony, the political hegemony, the narrative from the upper classes, from the top dogs to you. You've got to step outside of that. And you've got to risk stepping outside of the consensus itself. At this time on the planet, many of you who have been working spiritually for quite a long time, you're in a very high degree of evolution, you're stepping outside of the consensus now. You've been doing it for the past year and a half, but what happens is that the consensus has you in a little box, the little limitations of what you can do with money, what you can do in the world It can limit you with your health. It can limit you with your money. It can limit you with your relationships and your possibilities and opportunities and so on. But the culture has you in a box. And when you evolve, when you start to own who you are as a divine being, you bust out of the box. You expand your self-image. You're just beating up the walls, and you're standing up, becoming 20 feet tall, and light being, shining your light. We say 20 feet tall because that's what we ask you to imagine. You're stepping into a greater you, stepping into a more spiritual, divine you in your physical life. So what would it be like if you were 20 feet tall and just shining your light out for a mile in every direction? You're a beacon. You are a lighthouse of spiritual potency and power. What if you were that? Would you be afraid of the collective? Probably not. Well, so the collective doesn't want you to go there. When you bust out of the collective, there are guardians at the gate. They seem to be dark forces. Anytime that you expand your light, there are dark forces. And there, every time you expand your light, there is terror and rage. If you proactively release rage, if you know how to handle terror, you can say no to these guardians of the collective, and you can step beyond. All right, so let's look at the charge. Let's look at the significance. Let's look at the power of money that has been held over you. The most recurrent blockage and opposition we see to people making money or getting money, receiving money, being able to amplify their resources, to build their resources, to find clients, to find opportunities, and so on, is that money is just too damn important. And the collective intends it to be that way. They don't want you to have it easy because you won't put enough energy into the collective for the egregor to suck it from you. You're not an adherent. They can't feed off of you, right? So think about for a minute how important money is. You've given it excessive importance. You've given it excessive weight, significance, and meaning in your life. Isn't it time to give that up? What if money for you was just so easy? What if you woke up in the morning and you just knew you're going to have plenty of money and there's nothing ever to worry about? Regardless of how much you have in the bank, whether it's nothing or whether it's hundreds of thousands or what. What if you never worried about money? What if you only did what gave you joy and you opened to receive? Just step right now in your mind. Just step in there and feel. Feel that. Just sense it. What would that be like if money was just not important and it just came in, no problem? It was easy, natural. That was normal for you just to have money. One of our clients had such a breakthrough in money that he would find money. He would find in his house. He'd walk along and all of a sudden there'd be a pile of dollars. It was like magical. So it was just easy. There was just plenty of money. There it was. What if money was easy? So easy. Easy peasy, okay? Nothing to it. You did some stuff, you gave some energy out, and whew, here comes the money. Wow. How easy is that? No struggle, no suffering, no worry, no hassle. Doesn't that feel good? Isn't that a nice, free feeling? See, this is what your relationship with money needs to be. Money's a vibration like anything else. It don't baggage it down with all this heavy stuff. Because if when you do, it makes it harder to get. Right? So, let us help you. Give us all this excess charge and significance and weight that you have with money. Just right now, let's just do a little process, real quick process. Close your eyes and just tune in to you and money. Just sense within yourself what you've been holding on to money, how you've made it really important in your life, how you've given it so much charge, so much significance, so much meaning, how you've sweated over it, struggled over it, fought over it, got anxious over it, got worked up over it. All that stuff, all that dance you did for it, all the compromises for it, because it was so damn important. Let's let that go now. We're going to let go of the fear, because you see, you have so much fear connected to money. We're going to go through some fears, and if these fears match, you let them go anyway, because they're collective fears. And you may not even know how many fears you've got in there from the collective that's in your unconscious mind that is still affecting your body, still affecting your physical life, okay? So first, just release the fear of never having enough money. Let it go. Just sense it as a kind of a cold energy, just an ugly, kind of gunky, maybe it's a smoky kind of gray energy. Whatever it is, let it come out of you. Let it come out of your chest and your solar plexus because you've given your power to it. Let it just come out. Let it come out. And we and your team, you've got a lot of friends here with you on the other side. Let us all just take it and send it to the light, okay? Here we go. The fear of never having enough money. The fear of losing your money. The fear of having your money stolen from you. Having it taken from you. Having it manipulated from you. Losing it through your own negligence, bad choices. Release the fear of running out of money. Release the fear of losing your job, your source of income. Release the fear of not being able to hold on to your money. Release the fear of the pressure you'd be under if you had money, a lot of money. Like if you won the lottery and everybody would show up out of the woodworks wanting to claim some of it. What would you do then? That pressure, that demand, people bugging you. Let it go. Let it go. Let it go. Release the ego desire to have other people admire you for your money, or approve of you for your money, or look up to you or respect you for your money. And that's even if you don't have any. Let it go. This is in the collective. It's in you somewhere. Release the guilt that if you have it better than other people, that you should do something like give your money away, lose it, or something to let yourself be on the level of your friends or other people who have less money, out of compassion for them. That you can't let yourself be more successful than your parents, than your friends, than your community, than your network. Let go of that. Here we go. What other fears do you have about money? Fears of protracted legal battles? Family inheritances gone awry? Demands from children or family members for you to take care of them, sacrifice your income, your space, your all your life for to help them? Anything else you have, any other frustration, any other difficulty, anything else about money that makes it so damn important, so pivotal, so vital and necessary for your survival? Let it go now. All right. Okay, now feel. Feel within yourself. Feel the space that's opened up. There's some space now. Can you feel the space? Doesn't that feel good? It may feel a little strange. Just go and focus into the space. No fear. There's no guilt. There's no worry. There's no shoulds. There's things that you should be doing. Just go into the silence, go into the space, the quiet, the emptiness that is now left behind. Just let yourself tap into that quiet space, that nothing, that empty space. And in that space, is a potential and the possibility of anything and everything. The potential of everything. Of a future. A future of your own design. A possibility of a new, fresh relationship with money. All right, so come back from that, opening your eyes again. If you can regularly pay attention to and call out in your own psyche that tendency to make money too important, then you can do this release yourself. And consciously, you choose to be free, to have money, to let it come to you easily. It has no more value or less value than anything else. It's just part of the universe. And you are made of the same substance as everything else. Everything is one. Money is you. You are money. It's all one. No big deal. We had a client who was decided he would create a whole spiritual New Age empire. And so he decided that the first project of this New Age empire was that he was going to sell t-shirts with spiritual designs on them. And the money that he would make from that then would fund all these other projects. So when you have something like, if once I get this, then I can get that, then this becomes very important. It becomes the key pivotal piece. So he put together the designs. He had T-shirts printed. He got advertising. He placed advertising in magazines and because in those days there wasn't that much online advertising. And so he went with all the spiritual magazines and local and national and whatever, and he placed all these with these beautiful designs. He got 6 orders. He had spent, a couple of $1,000. He got 6 orders of T-shirts. He was absolutely crushed. And he complained that all his guides said this was going to be a hugely profitable enterprise. And we had to point out, but you put so much weight and so much significance on these T-shirts that you blew the energy. You can't do that. Because when you made it so important, then you invested all this money and time and effort and so on, pushing and driving. When what you're really wanting to create were these other projects, but you focused on the money. When you focus on the money doesn't focus on you. When you focus on the money, the egregor doesn't... Okay, you're putting out a lot of effort. Okay, yeah. Good. I'll take it. Yum, I'll take it. Yum. But when you put charge on money, you can't receive it. You blow it. So remember that. And periodically, when you're expanding your self-image, as we always urge you to do, add in that money is just another vibration, like anything else. Now, years ago, the channel had a private session with Lazarus, and some of you know who Lazarus is. He's a channeled being. And Lazarus, in response to her question how do I align with money? Lazarus said, well, you've got to get in connection with the spirit of money. With the vibration of money. Oh, says the channel, and how do I do that? And Lazarus gave her a ritual, the green candle ritual. And she did it. She did the ritual, and by golly, she was doing astrology at the time. She built her astrology practice, and she became one of the most successful astrologers in the whole country. Tremendous magic came out of it. She also found that it was fabulous in buying and selling real estate. And anything else where you get money, and because part of the ritual is seeing the check in your hand or whatever, really getting the connection with receiving money. So she typed it up and she distributed it. Right now we have it on the GalexaSpirit.com website under the resources or links. And if you go there, it's the very first one, the green candle ritual. So we recommend that you use that for just getting yourself in the vibration of money. It works. It works. All right. You use 4 candles. It's a marvelous, marvelous ritual. So we recommend that. Another thing that you can do also, and this is about the collective. Their egregor will respect you. Their egregor will give you favor if you are no longer dependent upon and needy upon the culture. If you stand in your own truth and in your own light, you get respect from the egregor. If you're giving your power away, as most people do, to money, to to the consensus. If you're giving your power away, there Gregor's got you and doesn't respect you at all. You're a doormat. But if you take your power back, and if you step into your truth, and if you hold, if you can receive tremendous energy from somewhere, it can be outside, from outside of the consensus. The consensus will respect it. And we're going to be doing that in meditation shortly. But we just wanted to tell you that there is a ritual of this in which you call upon the forces and you allow yourself to be supported by forces that are not physical. Now, these are not directly connected to money. Understand, this is about you stepping out of the consensus sucking energy of you. This is you stepping out of the collective and not stepping into terror and rage, because most people step into the terror and rage and get all freaked out and go running back in to the box and close the door. Oh my gosh, it was so scary out there. I'll be alone. I'll die. Nobody will love me. Oh my gosh, I'll starve. Most people cannot handle getting out of the collective. But this is your evolutionary time. This is what you're doing now, is getting out of the collective. And we want to help you get out of the collective without getting hit with all sorts of terrifying stuff, so that that makes you run helter-skelter back in. We don't want you to run back in. It's not safe in the consensus. Even though that's familiar, it's not safe. Where it's safe is in the divine energy, is in the forces of nature of the divine. Where it's safe is in the arms of your higher self, your soul, God, Goddess, all that is. That's where safety is. That's where the power really is. You being who you are, the spark of consciousness that you are. That's you there. And when you have that power, when you have that radiance, when you have that energy behind you, when the divine has your back and you allow it to support you, your egregor will respect you. And the egregor, which is kind of like a monster, just like a sucks energy and, you know, and manipulates, it's like a, it likes to eat your power. You're going to see it as a monster too. But the egregor is going to not just respect you, but it's going to, in a sense, allow you, from its perspective, it will see you as an influencer. It will see you as a potential favorite. It will see you as in your greatness. And everything can change. All right. So what we're going to do now is we're going to take a break. How many minutes?
10 minutes.
We're going to take a 10-minute break. And even if you're watching this not live, okay, even if watching this later, take 10 minutes, take a break, something. And maybe get something to eat or drink a little something and whatever. Get a state break and come back. And then we will be answering questions that you may have. All right. So think of what questions you would like to ask. And all sorts of fascinating and interesting stuff is about to happen. All right, dear ones. So we surround you with light and love. And for now, farewell.